You're tuned into the audio channel from scorenotes.com. Enjoy the show.
Well, hello, Marco, and hello, Buck. Thank you to both of you for joining us tonight on scorenotes.com. How are you doing?
We're good. Great.
Just to get things underway, I'd like to talk about the Hurt Locker, of course. Now, the Hurt Locker was released a few months ago in 2009, and now that award season is coming along, it's really picking up momentum. Just would like to get your thoughts about being involved and contributing to that film.
Well, it was a great experience from the moment that we first saw the film, which is now going back a couple years, when it was back when Catherine was editing it. I knew it was a great film, and was eager to work on it. And it knew that we had to take sort of a non-traditional approach to the score.
And if you could elaborate on this non-traditional approach, you had to incorporate, of course, some Arabic influences into the suspenseful cues that are on the album and in the film.
Not so much in that sense, but more in that, for example, if you watch the movie, you would think that it's... that there might not be that much score in it. It turns out there's actually over an hour of music, but it's the way it's crafted is that it's the most part blended in as a sound texture with the sound work that's going on. So from non-conventional, I mean in that respect, there are instruments used, traditional and non-traditional, or Western and non-Western instruments used in it, but I think the biggest thing about it is that it treats sound almost as an instrument itself.
And in Hurt Locker, how critical is the soundtrack to the suspense that's taking place on screen?
Yeah, it was they did a lot of field recording there in Jordan where they filmed, and the sound designer Paul Ottison, he later did some manipulations with it to help sort of distort the sounds and give a different perspective. And then we shared some sounds back and forth. He gave us some of the Muslim prayers that you hear through the crappy PAs and the weird car horns and stuff like that, and then we were able to integrate them into the score. So I think that's where it really sort of blends together well. And the fact that the film is really sort of based in realism, almost like a sort of documentary feel to it, having that those perspectives really helps with the tension instead of trying to overhype it and oversell it with gigantic explosions or orchestra trying to lead the charge.
And I guess how different was it for both of you to be involved with a movie that kind of crosses over and is inspired by ongoing events?
Yeah, usually it's vampires and monsters and stuff. But the great thing I think works about Hurt Locker is it's not really about the current war that's going on. It is a situation they're dealing with, with the roadside bombs and stuff like that. But I think just the main theme of the film is about the addiction to war and the adrenaline, and how that could really be applied to any time period. I think that's what resonates so strongly with the film. It is not so much about Iraq. It was just captured so well, so beautifully that I think that's really what got us inspired. But it was cool to hear about Mark, the writer, Mark Bull, his being in the sort of trenches with the guys, the bomb squads and stuff like that. So it was cool to hear that what it's, the reality it is based on.
Yeah, I think you touched on a key point where maybe some of these other movies based within the Iraqi war fail. Is that the Hurt Locker really brings you to the front lines and attaches you to the characters of the movie?
Yeah, yeah. It's been the tension. adrenaline and all that is the focal point, not so much any sort of political statement.
Indeed, and how great of a payoff is it just to see, you know, the national recognition it's now getting?
I think it's justly recognized. I mean, oftentimes the things that you feel might not deserve the recognition or is misplaced, but in this case, we always felt from the beginning that it was a movie that should receive attention, and now that it is, it feels justified.
It was always so. We've done a few Q&As with Catherine at screenings and stuff like that, and just to hear her talk in detail about the experiences they went through in making the film, with stuff that we didn't realize, you know, while we were working on it, it helped to create even a deeper impression of just what a struggle it was to make the film and what an awesome job they really did.
And moving on to the work that the two of you do, now how long have you been collaborating together?
I've been working with Marco for, I think, about 13 years.
Our first movie where we actually shared credit was,
Highway 395.
Highway 395, which was back in, 98,
somewhere in there.
Yeah.
We'd love to hear about, you know, the chemistry that the two of you have and what enables you both to work so well together.
I think we both bring a different set of tools. Marco, I come from maybe a more traditional orchestral background. Buck has always been way more adept at the technological and computer aspect of the business, and both are really necessary, especially for what we do when we incorporate both into, I mean, in the Hurt Locker especially, but in all our scores now, incorporating both sides, and it sort of works hand in hand like that. We're not both doing the same thing usually,
but at the same time, Marco, you know, he handles most of the more traditional orchestral writing and stuff like that, but we always sort of bounce ideas off of each other. So, like, if I'm working on a palette of sounds, manipulations, or, you know, creating sounds, whatever, you know, Marco's always got an idea, or, you know, he's always providing feedback, and vice versa with using themes or different arrangements or stuff like that with from me to work Marco. So it's not just limited specifically to one guy does one thing, one guy does another. There is a lot of back and forth and sort of, I guess, challenging each other and trying to get different ideas across.
Yeah, it sounds like a very fluid and successful collaboration. So it's a very interesting insight to, you know, how you guys pull it off.
Yeah, it's been going well.
Yeah, I would say it's quite rare, too, I think, that the nature in which the two of you team up in the industry as it is today.
Yeah, it is. It's being a composer traditionally is pretty much a solitary business, although, I mean, a lot of composers have assistants and have a team, so to speak. To actually truly collaborate is a different matter, and you're right, it's not especially common.
I'd like to take a look back at the score for Max Payne, which I really dug. I thought it was a fantastic work, and would love to just get your thoughts on, you know, having worked on that, and your opinion about the music that you delivered for it.
Well, there is a perfect example of the collaboration. It's as I mentioned before, a lot of the template, so to speak, for it was synthetically based and based on analog and stuff, but in collaboration with the traditional orchestra and making them the two fit together so they sound like they're meant to be together and not forced on each other. That was, I think that was one of the first times we really delved into that seriously.
Yeah, and one of the cool challenges about the film was they didn't have a lot of money for getting a big band that, you know, John Moore, the director, his previous two films we've done with them, you know, had really large orchestras, and this is just a few strings and some horns. And so from the get-go, we knew it had to have a sort of a big sound that was really driving, but you know, but also didn't sound purely synthetic. And so, you know, a lot of the cues were designed to for the synth to double the orchestra or reinforce, you know, what the orchestra's playing, but with a slightly different tonal character, not just like replacing or, you know, not just using big sample libraries of orchestral instruments, but, you know, using these analog sounds as accompaniment with the orchestra, sort of an expansion on that world. And it was a film like that, it allows for that, you know, because it's dealing with weird psychedelic drugs and demons and stuff. So.
Now, what seems to be the trend, you know, in movies today with the success of Avatar? I think there's going to be some interesting films, maybe of a sci-fi nature, that'll be coming down the road. You know, does the future of filmmaking, what may be in store, excite you?
Yeah, well, I'm hoping so. I think there's definitely a new world of possibilities opening up. It's the whole business itself is changing the way films are getting made and marketed and put together, both from the whole film and from the music side of things, and hopefully there's some relevance to what we do.
Now, with each new project, do you try your very best to be able to work on it together, and are there some instances where maybe you two have to split up?
No, so far we attack most of the projects. We take them, we discuss before we take the project whether it's something we're interested in, whether we're you know, what the ideas might be for it, how we're going to approach it, and sort of set a game plan, I guess.
Just to also look at another, you know, fairly recent project, with a movie like Knowing, that was the music was really well placed in there. It really helped the movie. I thought it was an underrated picture as well.
Yeah, I agree. Alex is just so awesome to work for, because he really just, you know, starting with iRobot, that was like a rush gig that we had to do in just a few weeks, and he just let us do it. You know, we felt natural, and then that went even further with this film, and we had probably 6 months to work with him. So he really was able to fine-tune and push us further than, you know, we probably would have just gone, you know, on a normal gig. I was really happy with how that came out.
Yeah, what's cool about that is, you know, with such a visual director like that, to hear that he takes such a keen interest in making sure, you know, that the score and the sound design and everything is, you know, what he wants. That must have been nice to get that kind of feedback from him throughout that process.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and he invited us to the dub as well, the final mix, which usually, you know, composers aren't brought to, and you know, he really pumped the music and had it be a sort of musically driven film, like a, you know, an earlier Hitchcock film, and that was pretty cool to to be a part of. You know, a lot of times scores get sort of mixed back, you know, and there were a few times where we told him that we thought it was too loud, but he didn't listen.
Very rare thing.
He didn't listen to us and just kept it loud. But.
And just one final thought on Knowing. You know, what I really appreciated most about it, it had a payoff, and not a lot of movies have those climactic moments that really make you feel like it was a cinematic event. And the music, of course, played a key role in that. So great work all around on that production, I thought.
That was a lot of fun. Thanks. Yeah, that was great to have it. It just kept they kept sort of not changing direction so much at the end, but just kept sort of redoing their idea of what the final planet should be, and that final cue that's in the film, Marco actually wrote on the airplane on the way to Sydney. We recorded in Sydney, so that the last cue, which I think is really neat and different sounding from a lot of stuff that we do. It was cool to sort of to be able to do that, you know, and have that new world at the end of the film be able to support some interesting music.
And I would imagine those are the type of movies that you two must really enjoy, is something that's, you know, visually crafted in a stellar way and allows room for the music to develop along with the visuals.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we got to get having Alex to make another movie.
Yeah, it takes too long.
Yeah, well, curious to see what, you know, with the technology that Avatar is bringing to the table, I'd love to see what someone like that can do with those resources.
Yeah, I think he was interested to see the how Avatar was going to fare himself, because it's definitely up his alley, you're right. Yeah, we can do the sequel.
There you go. And as we look ahead, first month of the year, have you lined up your projects, films, for the early part of 2010? Are you working on anything currently you could share?
Well, the only one that we're working on now, we're finishing this HBO movie directed by Tommy Lee Jones. It's a Cormac McCarthy play that he filmed. It's basically just him and Sam Jackson in a room, for the most part, and called The Sunset Limited. I'm not sure when the lair or whatever, but then we just have a movie for Guillermo del Toro that's touring in April in probably in Australia, but that's all we really know about now.
Well, on that note, I would just like to commend you both for producing really entertaining and interesting works of music. I think you guys keep getting better and better as well. Your work is always terrific, but you keep setting the bar high, and that's great to hear for a soundtrack fan.
Well, that's very nice. Thank you, Ben.